This episode is brought to you by KJK. Tired of the billable hour? KJK has a solution. The KJK GC Advantage program offers businesses comprehensive legal services in the areas of employment, corporate services, real estate, trademark, intellectual property, and estate planning, all for a set monthly fee. KJK serves as their clients' partners in business, not just their lawyers. Along with cost certainty and predictability, the KJK GC Advantage program gives clients peace of mind, knowing their projects will be handled quickly and efficiently, maximizing the return on investment on their legal spend. So don't go it alone. Let KJK help. Learn more by visiting kjk.com. Startups Nation, welcome to another episode of the 614 Startups Podcast. My name is Elio Harmon, your host, and I'm back in my favorite seat with a very special guest, my man Chad Porter of Chad Justin. Chad, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Elio. I'm excited to talk today. This is something we highly anticipated. We've been waiting.
Great, man. So a little bit of the backstory. I got an introduction to you months ago, all right? Mm-hmm. One-man operation. Took me forever to get a hold of you, and then all of a sudden we run into each other. So thank you so much for being gracious and agreeing to be a guest on the show.
Yeah, of course. We ran into each other about three times in 1 week. And so it was just like, oh, it's meant to be.
Yeah, man. And you just gave me that look like, I understand, man. It's cool. We're going to make it happen. Cool. Yeah. All right. I appreciate that. All right. So even though, you know, we got connected via email and we've seen each other three times, I still got to get a chance to know you, and I always like to start the podcast that way. So who is Chad Porter, and how did you come to live in Columbus?
So Chad Porter, I'm 23-year-old, recent college graduate, about 11 months out from Ohio State University. I'm actually born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio, but I came to Ohio State University as a student for college, and I've been here for about 4.5 years, and then post-graduation have been out here working to, you know, grow my business endeavor, Chad Justin.
Okay, great, man. So Ohio State grad. What did you study at Ohio State?
So I was an economics major. I got my bachelor's in the arts of economics.
Okay, man. Well, you know, I got to pick your brain about the economy and economics in general. Let's play a little game of buy, sell, hold. Okay. Given all the news that is happening in the economy, et cetera, I want to get your thoughts on these four sectors. Let's talk real estate right now. Are you a buyer, a seller, or holder of real estate?
So right now, in terms of real estate, I'm a holder. You know, high interest rates and also very high prices, you know, the housing market kind of shot up. So, you know, if I wanted to invest and, you know, get a nice chunk, I would wait due to these high interest rates for prices to drop down, hopefully in the next 5 to 6 months when things get reined in, and then look to, you know, make a new entrance into that real estate market. Unless I purchased a property at a very high value, like a lot of people did with those Airbnbs, this might be the most opportune time to try to get that property that you purchased for overpriced off while prices are still high. But if not, I would hold and wait for, you know, lower interest rates and, you know, more discounts, better pricing.
It feels very much like that's what the Fed wants you to do. Right. It feels very much like in order to get inflation down, they want everybody to hold right now, both sellers and buyers, so we could find some price stability. OK, let's talk about the U.S. stock market. Right. We're hearing layoffs coming from big tech, some big announcements from folks like Meta. What was it like? 10%, 13% of the workforce, 11,000 people who are going to be laid off. So what are your thoughts on stocks? Buy, sell, hold.
Stocks right now, hold. I know it's a lot of people sold as they were high. You know, if I was in some of, you know, Amazon or some stocks, I for sure would have sold by now. But if not, if you have a long play position, just hold, because we're experiencing a lot of turbulence in the market right now. But for a lot of those blue chips, this is kind of that, you know, reining in during that inflation time. We saw a lot of things run, you know, a little unnaturally. So I feel like in the coming months, as we hold now, getting into the market, we're going to be able to see good returns. And I think solid pricing that are more reflective of the world and economy at this point. I think this is a great corrector. You know, there was a lot of rush, you know, a lot of expansion, a lot of things, but now we're turning and just cutting back, you know, but I definitely see optimism, you know, in the future.
Yeah, man. Sound thoughts, but human behavior is another thing. And that's a whole other field of economics, right? Behavioral True. Economics, knowing what True. To do and actually doing it. Two huge different things. All right. Sure. The darling, right, back in 2020, 2021 was crypto.
Yep.
All right. But we now see what's happening in crypto, especially with the number one exchange in crypto, Binance, pulling a shark move
yeah.
and putting the number two exchange in a position where they could acquire them for pennies on the dollar. What are your thoughts on crypto? Buy, sell, or hold?
I would honestly sell, or if you're still there, kind of hold. Just as we touched on earlier, they're, you know, kind of buying them for pennies on the dollar, because at one point they were valued at, you know, $14 billion, but now they're getting purchased for $616 million for the purpose to stop the floodgates. They cannot even suffice their customers who are trying to withdraw, who are trying to cash out on the crypto. So that just shows that, you know, kind of that inflation period we were at, where things were a little running uncorrected, you know, a lot of speculation. So I feel as though, particularly now that things are so low, maybe this is the opportune time to invest in those different vehicles.
All right. Yeah. So those crypto nerds, man, don't come for me when I say this. OK, but listen, wasn't the whole point of crypto to be decentralized? Number one, buying number True. Two. Isn't that centralization? All right. Don't come for me, man. I know some people are passionate about their crypto. All right. I wanted to ask you one more thing, but it's not important now. If it comes to me, we'll talk about it. Sounds I had four good. Areas that I'm, oh, cash.
Yeah,
okay,
cash.
So given so much volatility in the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are two schools of thought, cash is king or cash is trash, especially when you throw inflation in the mix. So what are you doing with your cash right now? What are your thoughts on that? Those two positions?
Cash is king in a tangible market that I'm in. I have a tangible product business. So, you know, we're looking at, you know, keeping cash flows high, you know, and investing in things that, you know, return higher. So inventory is a solid investment for us because, you know, we can, you know, recoup that cash. And just looking at alternative vehicles, holding in terms of investing in, you know, necessary expansions right now in terms of retail space and things of that nature, we're kind of drawing back and kind of focusing on keeping cash flows high, generating, being prepared to keep cash flows high and investing in those, you know, key markets once things, you know, stemmy out. So we're prepping for growth. You know, this is a time where, you know, you might sell some bad apples and now we're just stockpiling and ready for an emergency.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to have cash on hand, man. No matter what's happening with inflation, it does not hurt to have cash on hand in case you find a deal and you could jump on it. All right, folks, that was Chad's impromptu audition to become our resident economist. We certainly need one as we grow. So, Chad, I appreciate you indulging me. This is not financial advice, of course. We cannot give financial advice. We're just having a little bit of fun as we chat. Okay, so of all the things that you could have done, maybe you could have gone to a large firm and been an economist there. Why'd you choose to become an entrepreneur? And what has that journey been like for you so far?
So essentially, I chose to be an entrepreneur from, you know, getting into stocks, learning about companies, all these vast markets, and also just having a passion for invention, creation, and just, you know, entrepreneurship. I always enjoy that. So that kind of started my journey. I saved money to invest in stocks and then learned about one of the budding industries. The retail industry was doing huge as I was learning about stocks, Lululemon and activewear brands such as the such. And after discovering a lagging industry, the backpack market has stayed the same the past 100 years. And there's been no disruption in the industry. And after, you know, kind of studying that, it kind of made me focus that instead of becoming, you know, getting into the investment industry as a, you know, finance, you know, maybe turn to entrepreneurship, disrupting markets, innovating markets. You know, for instance, you know, what does Steve Jobs do? He changed the flip phone to an iPhone. And we noticed that backpacks were lagging. So we're going to change the backpack to our flagship patent pending product, the Wear Pack. So that same idea is of studying innovation, studying market driving companies, and then using my passion for creation and innovation to kind of disrupt the market and begin that journey on her own. So it was that passion for creativity, that passion for entrepreneurship, that kind of propelled me forward.
Yeah, so why backpacks, man? Are you a backpacker? I mean, I, when I think backpacks, I think students, right? People who have to use a backpack. But that's because of my limited knowledge of the backpack industry. Now, I mean, when I travel light, I also use a backpack. So backpacks are also luggage. So why backpack? And was backpack the original idea?
So, and to start now, we are trying to change. And if we get our way in the future, instead of saying backpacks, you'll say wear pack. And that kind of touches along what we're doing. So what we've created is a licensed wearable tech bag. We've noticed that the reason why backpacks were lagging because they haven't innovated for our new age tech needed sales. You know, we aren't using the traditional backpack with a ton of books anymore. We need a product that caters to our need for technology and versatile lives. So this all started as I was going to economics class my sophomore year. I had a big bulky backpack at this point. This was post, you know, Chad Justin, post the innovation. And as I got to class with my big bulky backpack on, all the students had iPads. They gave all the students iPads that year. And even my teacher went so far to say, hey, everyone take out your phone electronics and let's do class today. I just brought my books. I forgot my iPad. I don't even think I have my phone. So consequently, using that old backpack, that old system, I lost points in class. I was not able to participate in class. So if the most essential daily accessory that we use for class, school, work, was no longer able to, you know, pass, that was my key on innovation. So it was simply being a student, simply using a product and seeing that it was outdated through that use. So that was kind of the start of it. I didn't happen to get into backpacks. It's just through realizing that, whoa, I need my phone, wallet, and keys more than a big bulky backpack. I need the versatility to go to the gym, to hop on a bike, you know, to have those daily essentials on me daily. That was more of the play. So then it kind of showed me where the future was going. Maybe we're turning into more of cyborgs and need a daily product versus just a regular backpack because we just had paper books 60 years ago. So
yeah, we needed an option, but it's one thing to see a problem, is another thing to see a problem and then decide to solve it. So when did you make that leap from big bulky backpack, this is not practical, to I'm going to build a company and here's how we're going to solve the problem?
Yeah. So over that time, I just, you know, started doing research. I learned that all of the big backpack brands have literally been around for 100 years. JanSport has been selling the same bags for 80 years. You know, that's not heard of in a lot of times. So after that day, I went back to my dorm room and simply started sitting out my daily essentials, started sketching, started, you know, really trying to figure out a product that could, you know, conform and, you know, really innovate that market. So over this next 6 months, just kind of using my different economics class, one class was talking about the process of manufacturing and different things of that nature. And I happened to be trying to product design a product. I learned how to hand sew back in second grade, researched every type of backpack material, researched a ton of YouTube videos, decided to use my campus job to, you know, pay for, you know, backpack fabric, quarter fabric, got it shipped to my dorm. And after making these sketches, I hand sewed the first wear pack. And then after that, I learned how to use a sewing machine, use my campus job to buy a sewing machine, and then learn the process of manufacturing. So I just started writing out the simple steps, put the second one together, and then just got better. Watched a couple of YouTube videos, got better and better with that, and then started putting my daily essentials in and kind of just product design that for the next, you know, semester. And then with that, you know, we produced some units, gave them to students. We ended up able to sell 200 units of that first initial wear pack design. And guess what? It wasn't that good. We got a lot of feedback. It was a tough entrepreneurship journey, but we learned that the thought was there, but the product wasn't good. There was no water bottles. There was no water bottle holders. There was no adjustment for unisex. Guys and girls need backpacks, right? You know, there was a lot of key features, a lot of key design elements that we missed. We actually failed on that one. But then we used all of that feedback to come back and redesign a whole brand new wear pack model that had those initial features, and now that's what's been taken off. So it would, to innovate that market, it took a lot of different steps of designing, configuring, and developing.
Yeah, you don't hear somebody busting out the sewing machine in 2022. And you know, this is my first time hearing that. But how did you avoid the knee-jerk reaction to outsource this? Because you said, I went back to my dorm room and I started sketching. Then I used the money I had to buy the fabrics. Then I bought a sewing machine and I sewed the first one myself. I know necessity is the mother of invention, but a lot of people will then now be thinking, how do I get it manufactured overseas? As a first step, why'd you choose to go very, 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 like, do this yourself?
Because I knew I had no resources, and it was my only ploy. Like, it was my only option. Just in that, you know, entrepreneurship, young student startup world, there's truly not a lot of resources for you. So you kind of realize, like, I have to figure this out. And after studying a lot of greats, I just realized, you know, a lot of these people, even Dell Computers, I did a lot of research on previous founders. Dell Computers, he was creating his own computers with, you know, different parts he got in his dorm room. He knew how to make a computer. So I felt, you know, even though I don't know these things compared to, I'm very creative, always went out of that product design experience, you know, I just decided to take the time to learn how to really create this product myself. And I realized that if I was able to do that, it's what changed the trajectory of my business, because now we are, you know, wholesaling. We do have wholesale overseas manufacturing, but it makes it so better, and my relationships with our suppliers are so much better because I can produce this product myself. So if there are mess ups, hey man, it makes that relationship better, because I say, hey man, I'm going to fix up this mess up you guys did, but I'm going to need a discount. Well, now when they see that level of, you know, experience, it aids in the process moving forward. So,
yeah, they can't miss that double stitch, right? We need that double and triple stitch right here where this bag and the strap meet, and you're able to detect that. So in a way, that experience helped you to become your own quality control.
Oh, yeah.
When you outsource to a manufacturer
and perfect the product. Well, what's taken us further is the people I'm competing against are now 75, 80, 90 years old. So, but now I have that same backpack, you know, the same product design experience at a younger age to be able to really know the ins and outs. You know, this is something that it looks simple, but unless you understand why certain things, we have some belts, buckles, and adjustment features that are specific for this product, you know, specific. You know, some interesting things. And that is from the development. That is from the passion. You know, I mean, you know, we do things for a reason. Very purposeful.
Yeah, man. I've seen you put that thing together, put it on, take it apart, and transform it into 15 different options. I've seen it work. And I know a lot of thought went into that because, and even the sound of it, right? You know, people overlook, like you said, Steve Jobs went from a flip phone to a smartphone. iPhone. Yeah, but he just didn't do that. He also innovated the packaging, the experience, and all of that. Yes. And I think that was part of you going to the basics. You were able to do even the snap sounds like a quality product, right?
And key features matter. Adding certain quality pieces in, and even the name Wear Pack.
Mm-hmm.
We have that name trademarked. It's the same concept that we're trying to get. You know, you see the growth. Flip phone, iPhone,
mm-hmm.
backpack, 100 years old, same product, innovation of that, the Wear Pack, you know.
Yeah, man, I can sense the passion. I see the vision too, because that was one of the things I noticed when I saw Wear Pack as a brand, and I listened to your pitch when you pitched at Cohatch. You were very specific in that you wanted to transform not just the backpack industry, but create a new industry, which is the wear pack industry.
A whole new industry. That's the concept that people don't. Imagination is incredible, because you got to think about it. Now, in our future, now what if the kids of the future, the young professionals, are saying, "I want a wear pack"? What if we truly phase out that, you know, that old decrepit backpack? You know, mm-hmm. and really train, you know, that's really capturing markets. That's really disrupting. And, you know, you know, we just been, you know, thinking about it from a different angle.
No, the potential is there. And I think you've done the groundwork to have that confidence that the potential will be there if you continue to execute. But let me ask you a question. Well, actually, you know what? We're going to leave them hanging. We're going to take a break right here. We are on the 614 Startups Podcast. My name is Elio Harmon, your host. You're listening to my conversation with Chad Porter of Chad Justin. And stay tuned after these messages. We'll be right back. Support for the 614 Startups Podcast comes from Nationwide. Nationwide's mission is to protect people, businesses, and futures with extraordinary care. To help fulfill that mission, Nationwide is looking to invest its $350 million venture capital investment fund in InsurTechs that will help them create new and exciting products and solutions to meet the needs of their customers. If you're interested in partnering with Nationwide's venture capital team, visit nationwideventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is nationwideventures.com. Nationwide is on your side. This episode is brought to you by Rev1. Rev1's mission is to help entrepreneurs build great companies. As you navigate the waters of business entrepreneurship, you don't have to go it alone. A strategic partnership with Rev1 connects innovators to the talent, customers, space, and funding you need when you need it. Get started with Rev1 Startup Studio by visiting rev1ventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is rev1ventures.com. 614 Startups Nation, welcome back to my conversation with Chad Porter of Chad Justin. All right, man, where we left off and the question that I had before we went to break is you mentioned going from sewing the first one to selling 200. What was that process like?
So the process was, you know, it was interesting. So I was sold, we hand created 25 handmade wear packs. And the idea was we were going to use selling those 25 handmade wear packs. We're going to use the revenue from that and the track record from that to get a small angel investment to produce 200 units and then kind of sell our product. So we were able to do this. It was fun. You know, I had, in the later times, I think at the presentation at the Cohatch, you saw kind of the dorm room factory in which, you know, we have 20 steps in order to put the product together. So I had some dorm room mates kind of helping me crank out, you know, the little sweatshop in the dorm room to kind of get those 25 units first. So we got those together and we kind of had people that we knew were going to purchase those. And then once we got a small angel investment after producing the sample, so that was one of the beautiful things. In order to get samples, product design, things made, and a lot of times that is the barrier to entry in the market. Because if I didn't create my product myself, I'm not going to lie, I would have needed about $5,000 to $10,000 in order to get that first sample made and da-da-da. Meaning, for a lot of college students, that is the barrier to entry. But I saved myself $5,000 to $10,000 by prototyping my product myself. Meaning, an investor can see it and say, oh, I can see that. I can feel that. Is going to get you an investment. So we used that to then produce 200 units. I found a factory out of Minneapolis that did wholesale overseas. You know, we were able to, we no longer work with them, but you know, it helped suffice and get us to that point. So after getting these 200 units, it was a difficult process. You know, I had to figure out marketing. You know, I was a dude in a cubicle sewing all day, you know, so I had to figure out marketing, photo shoots, things of that nature, how to show our product, show the use of it. So those first 200 sales were hard guerrilla sales. I'm going to be honest with you. I made 175 personal sales. This came from DMing Instagram friends, doing pop-up shop events, walking and talking to people. You know, it was a lot of stuff. We really had to push those bags. It was a new product. But in doing that, a lot of personal connections and a lot of feedback. Hey, I truly love your hustle, so I'm going to buy this. You know, after using it, hey, man, it's not really my thing. I don't know if you realize this, but a couple of my female friends said, I don't know if you realize this, but, you know, our body types are different and this isn't adjustable. So even though I wanted to wear it like this, I can't. That was great feedback, you know. So it was hard sales like that. So we you know, got sales for various different reasons, found people that, oh, well, this works perfectly for me, and they're still using that product today. You know, so it was a lot of different information, but what it did show me is that this is something that's good. Yeah, we'll sell, but is this what takes us there? Is this really what disrupts that market? Is this really what innovates that market? So that's kind of what all that feedback and that first product push was for.
Yeah. So what was the pitch? Because you said you needed to get to 20 to get the money that you needed to get to 200. So what was that initial friends and family angel investor pitch was like that you think sealed the deal for you to get the money that you needed? What was your selling point? What was the value prop for the people who invested?
So the value prop was, this is a new invention. We created a product. I was able to put a provisional patent in. I had trademarked the name. And so it was an aunt, and she truly saw the potential. And I made sure to get some sales. You know, I did create 20 of these bags, sold 25, and sold them, caught about 1,000 or so in sales. So it was just something that was budding, something that was growth, you know, and just willing through that hard work, through that sweat equity, stuff that you can actually see. At least I know this dude was doing some work. At least I kind of see he has some form of work ethic, you know, that allowed them, and being able to send a couple pictures. It was like, okay, we can put together a small allotment just for him to get some inventory. So that was kind of the steps of it. Just, you know, simply inventory to get further, you know, product information and kind of get a start.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things is you would have raised the money via sales anyway. I think that's one of the things that's important for, maybe you would have had to like flip that $1,000 more times, but you would have gotten there. And I think that's what a lot of young entrepreneurs, they don't understand. It's like the best time to raise is not to raise to be able to do the thing. It's to raise in order to accelerate what you're already doing. And the investor can see like, oh, he has a pathway to get into this money. It just might take him 2 years to do it. So yeah, why don't I just fast forward and get and erase those 2 years for him? So I think that's important advice that you're communicating through your story, is that that investor came along and just shortened the time frame. You were going to get there anyway. You didn't necessarily, let me not downplay it. It was important, but it wasn't a necessity. You were going to get there because of your grit and your determination.
Yeah, it's been an interesting process through and through. That's what I will say. And even now, you kind of recognize, whoa, okay. And this is where a lot of entrepreneurs do get mixed up. We sometimes forget that, hey, if you actually have a good product, actually figured out how to sell it, and it actually sells and fits market need, you can't just go and make revenue and save it and invest profits. You truly can do these things. So that was something that, as I've been able to build, be more revenue focused, be more test focused, you know, don't let investment be the end all be all. Go try to sell, try to get some contracts, you know, and that's going to in itself move that investment further, you know.
So you have some legacy companies that you're hoping to disrupt, or you intend to disrupt. Give me the lay of the land, the market, right? The backpack market. What have you found out? Who are some of the big players? And then how do you intend to reach your target market?
So we have two markets that we combine, and this is through extensive research, selling, trying our product, trying to find what works. We noticed that the backpack market, a $20 billion industry. And then the promotional items market, a $23.6 billion industry. And we'll kind of dig deep into these. So in terms of backpacks, there's a lot of key players. Like we said, JanSport, 10 million units a year. North Face, FJ Fall Raven, Osprey. There's just different competitors, and even Nike has their extent of, you know, various backpacks and things. But how we're trying to get in our market is, not only do we have a patent pending innovation of that product, we want to go a different direction. So our focus is B2B. So those markets, they were able to get funding to focus direct to the consumer. You know, they were able to raise and do these things. That's not the case here. What we realize is, let's target some of the biggest purchasers of backpacks, students. So we've realized that through licensing, getting university licenses, we're able to start by selling internally to those universities. So we realized that we have a stadium clearback product. season ticket holders. Student Life gives wholesale gifts to, you know, students every year. There's various alumni associations, alumni clubs. Ohio State has 600,000 alumni. These are areas in which we've been able to do custom collaborative deals to go B2C, you know, wholesale our product to our target market, get it in their hands for wholesale margins. But we're hitting two heads with one spoon, essentially. Not only are we selling our product, but it's getting into its target hands through a separate channel. So they had the opportunity to go direct to consumer. We're going B2B. And then
which is smart. Yeah. Because you kill two birds with one stone, truly, because you get the wholesale market, but then everybody's a walking ad.
Yes. And then it goes to our online sales, and once we get that high retail market. So through going B2B, it's money both angles.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like what I said. We can't get the funding for a marketing budget, so we let them buy it from us and market it for us.
Yeah, and what you may have been given is in one color wave. That doesn't necessarily mean that's the color wave you want.
Yeah,
you can now go to the website and buy the color wave that you actually want, or you could build a collection for yourself because you can also purchase this retail.
Yes, exactly. So it's those two avenues, as well as, you know, student ambassadors, things of that nature. And also, we have a patent pending innovation product. So maybe they've already been purchasing a standard backpack. But now, why buy a backpack when you can get a wear pack, five bags in one? It's not a logical sense when it's not a logical decision when you get to those points. So that's how going B2B and letting people make a logical decision of, oh, well, this is five bags in one for a cheaper price than one basic bag. It's you know, plus our social mission that's going to give a portion back to those students and things that we work with. We're definitely a better B2B product. And then promotional items. So we realized one of the biggest purchaser of backpacks actually is not students. It's corporate companies. We found out that corporate companies such as banks and these different things purchase hundreds of thousands of backpacks a year to give for conferences, employee swag, onboarding. If you work at a tech company, they give you a laptop and a backpack, okay? So those are markets we can, you know, disrupt as well. So we found large B2B markets that we can wholesale disrupt, get our product into that system, and basically focus that direction. Through this licensing. So it's a way that with our innovative patent pending product to get that same market penetration outside of our competitors. So all of our big competitors, their businesses are direct to consumer. We're starting ours off B2B with a patent pending exclusive product. So once we get it into these B2B channels, have these large entities already pushing our innovative product onto masses, people are more susceptible for a new idea for Ohio State's on it.
Yeah. And so let's back up a little bit. So when did the light bulb for the business model go off? Like, I mean, you're selling your first 200. When does it flip and say, you know what, we could sell 4,000 if I just went to the university?
So it was a couple things. It was kind of just a necessity. I kept getting a lot of no's, a lot of things weren't working, and I just had to, you know, figure out and just do research. So I'm a big guy in why I love economics. Well, you could do a lot of research, you know, research founders, and a lot of people just didn't do the research. So let me dive in. So Ralph Lauren, how did Ralph Lauren get started? As he was getting his brand off the ground, he got a wholesale custom order for a law firm for 1,000 custom ties, B2B order, and he used that to build his brand on those early stages when there wasn't a lot of investment and he wanted to get his product out there. Wholesale B2B deals, you know? So instead of selling one tie to one person, I told you I made 175 personal sales. Trust me, I can go out there, but I just realized that, man, 175 personal sales are 250 custom unit order for holiday gifts for one tech company. And, you know, it just kind of made sense. So studying. So I said, if they can do it, we can do it, you know? And then even how to get an innovative product to transform a brand. Let's look at Nike. Tennis shoes were already around. Adidas was already the biggest player in shoes for the past 60 years. All they did was innovate the market. They introduced tennis shoes at an affordable price. So Nike did tennis shoes at an affordable price. It's a niche market. And then they had the university affiliation. The 49% owner of Nike was Bill Beverman, U.S. Olympic Universal Oregon track coach, okay? Let's see that trajectory. One more example. Under Armour. We all know what Under Armour is. Similar story. He came up with, there were already cotton Hanes style t-shirts. T-shirts were already around, okay? You know this as well. Mm-hmm. But what they decided was there needed to be an athletic, flexible style t-shirt, Under Armour. That is how it came about. And then they were able to get a partnership with the University of Maryland football team for these Under Armour drinks. So those are two catalyst companies that are where now?
They're traded industry
on the
leader.
They're traded on the stock exchange, industry leader. Mm-hmm. And well, with our innovative patent pending product, you know, we've been able to cross along those same journeys.
So what was that first B2B pitch like? So to make 175 personal sales, you probably had to do like 500 plus presentations, right? A lot of no's, a lot of no's, not a no. So you were sharp in that arena. But now you go to your first B2B, you go to your first university, you go to your first, what was that like for you? And then what was it like when you got the first yes?
So it was kind of interesting. So essentially, it was my senior year, going into my senior year. Our first school was actually not necessarily Ohio State. I sent out 250 emails, cold called about 100 schools in order to get in contact with one school. Only one school reached back out, North Carolina A&T. They absolutely loved the product, procurement office, and said, hey, would you be able to do this in transparent? Because we have a clear bag policy, and this could be a great gift for our alumni. Reaching out to clients, we found out that this is who you talk to get into a university. There is a need, and they do wholesale internal purchases at universities. So we then used this, and that was our first, 100 unit order as we were graduating college. But in order to fulfill that order, we had to work through the licensing. What a lot of people don't know that is you need a licensing contract first before you can produce any B2B orders for a school. So it was a lot of things we learned. So then at that point, we used the leverage of that internal sale to catapult us through that licensing process and figure that out. So once we kind of figured that out and were able to achieve that license and finalize that deal, it's kind of a funny story. We were trying to get a licensing deal at Ohio State while I was a student as well. And it was kind of funny because due to the story and different things, they were going to publish us in the alumni magazine. But then that's when the deal with North Carolina A&T got finalized in the order. So honestly, why would you publish that in the alumni magazine of another university, Division I university, giving me an order for a product I, literally invented on campus and tested on campus? So we didn't get that alumni magazine, but we did get the OSU license. So that's kind of the strategy and things that come with it, because it's real business. So if one university, well, what are we missing out on? We might need this as well. So we ended up closing those two licenses within a week of each other, simply due to those environments. So it was an interesting thing because you truly have to prove the efficacy of your product and that it sells. But trust me, once we got our first, internal purchase from a Division I university, it's just hard for another university to say that didn't work.
Yeah. And
it's very difficult.
It's very much like advertising on 614 startups, right? We needed that first cosign. We needed that first anchor deal. Yeah. And it's interesting that you found that first cosign out of state. But I think it's even more interesting that that cosign came from North Carolina A&T.
Yeah.
What do you think, besides it being a great product, attracted them? Now, it's a trick question because I have a thought on what might have attracted them to it. But besides just having a need, what do you think attracted them to your brand and wanted? You think drove them to want to do business with you?
Well, I mean, one thing is just I was a college, entrepreneur, that was I was good at sending out multiple emails. very effective. You know, I realized that I didn't have many opportunities or many chances. So I really took advantage of every, like, that was kind of the thing. They didn't realize that this was the only school that had ever reached out to me. So right when they got back to me, I used the money I had to drive to North Carolina NT with my buddy 10 hours just to meet with them in person. Like, I did a little over, I drove down to North Carolina NT 3 times in order to close that deal. But just understanding that I was a student, they actually, you know, were just willing to help me with the process and different things like that. And regardless of the reasons, it's just, you know, just speaking candidly, at sometimes as a young Black, you know, male in different avenues, the lenses in which you are viewed are different in a lot of circumstances. So same people, same situation, same things, but some, you know, factors cause some to be susceptible and some not to be, and some to be turned off. So we happened to just stay positive and just went through the opportunities that opened for us, you know, and being gracious in those opportunities, it led to, you know, further opportunities.
Yeah. Well, okay. So when you first started out, you had to learn the craft, the manufacturing.
Yeah.
You were already a lover of research. Mm-hmm. You were already willing to do the work, so you were willing to grind. You were already ready to put your money where your mouth is. You created a superior product. You licensed it. So you were taking a lot of important steps.
Yeah.
But here's what I suspect.
Yeah.
Is that you also, licensing. You had to understand licensing and all of that with universities. So you're picking up all these adjacent skills.
Yeah.
And you are, it's the same thing with being a founder, right? I have to learn a ton of things just sitting here doing this podcast that come about out of necessity.
Yeah,
but here's what I think you understood. And because I'm a lover of marketing, I understood when I first saw you and your product is that you understand brand.
Yeah.
You understand brand. And in a legacy industry, like you're selling into banking or selling into universities, backpack means a certain thing.
Yeah.
And if my predecessor ordered backpacks for the alumni, I order backpacks for the alumni. But what I think you ran into in North Carolina A&T is that they understand brand and they wanted their alumni to be swagging on other alumni.
Yes.
And so that culture of innovation, being the first one, like my alumni is cool.
They were happy. That was big for them because once they found out that I was like a student at OSU, they just kind of figured that there was some affiliation there. So they're like, wait a minute. Oh, snap. We can beat them out on this next innovative design. And even if not, well, our smaller HBCU will be partner with this bigger organization leading through it. And that kind of is what has happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like
that. It's a smart move on their side. You know, clearly, you know, they have, you know, some deep thinkers, you know, and very appreciative, you know.
Yeah, that's great. And there's nothing like that first sale, man. It is addicting when what you thought in your mind manifests in the real world. So I know that was a big moment for you. All right, folks, listen, you're tuned in to Columbus's number one source of startup interviews and news. My name is Elio Harmon. You're listening to my conversation with Chad Porter of Chad Justin. We'll be right back for our final break. See you soon. Support for the 614 Startups podcast comes from Book and Street. Book and Street provides finance and accounting solutions for startups in the Midwest and beyond. From strategic financial support to bookkeeping and everything in between, they've got your back office covered. Let their experienced team of finance and accounting professionals help your startup get it right from the start. Learn more at bookandstreet.com and set up your free 30-minute consultation with their team today. Today's episode is sponsored by the City of Dublin's Division of Economic Development. The City of Dublin provides world-class tailored business services and resources to ensure the best possible environment for businesses to recruit talent and thrive. Because of this strategic focus and commitment to employer growth, Dublin is the only accredited economic development organization in the state of Ohio. The city of Dublin supports startups and entrepreneurs by offering targeted resources and training programs to grow companies that are financially sustainable, innovative, and committed to creating jobs. Learn how other businesses depend on Dublin. Visit thriveindublinohio.com. 614 Startup Nation, welcome back. You're listening to my conversation with Chad Porter of Chad Justin. All right, Chad, you've put in the work. You've been grinding. There's more work to do. But what's next for you and your company?
So what's next for our company is just, you know, expanding. So we have five Division I licensed partners: Ohio State University, North Carolina A&T University, Miami University of Ohio, Hampton University of Virginia, and St. John's University in Queens, New York. By the end of the year, we want all of those schools upboarded on our website and generating. So you will be able to purchase these units. And we are also looking to, cap our university program as of now and focusing on acquiring, professional sporting franchises. You know, we want to quickly enter that market and grab up a little bit of market share as we, draw our, battle lines. So we really want to enter into those markets as well. So basically generate what we have now, make sure our current operations are generating, expand into the NBA, NFL, MLB, and then with that, prepare to, the next level of scaling.
So as you close these partnerships, what does that mean for the company itself? You guys hiring people?
Yes.
What does that mean for manufacturing? How are these new deals and this new onboarding impacting the actual operation of the company?
So in terms of the operation, especially with our corporate onboarding B2B sales, we're now hiring on the sales executives to kind of, grow that out. As we, return and grow and raise money, we're looking at opening a warehouse distribution center. So help with that. And then we need to work with, local designers. All of our custom designs, these are local designers doing this. These are local creatives that we grew up with. So there's going to investment in us allows a new Nike, a new fashion house to be in Central Ohio. If you've done some research, Nike's headquarters is in Beaverton, Oregon, not necessarily capital. It's in Oregon. Just imagine the creative jobs, retail, warehouse, distribution, things that come when, innovative brands are supported in the community. So, that's kind of what we're looking for. Expand our sales team, expand our design team, expand our marketing team. We need more models now. We're Ohio. And trust me, there's a lot of talent out here. So, we're looking at essentially working with the community. That's the game plan at this point,
That's amazing, man. And congratulations are in order. But this is a new phase of entrepreneurship, right? You've been grinding solo dolo, but now you're hiring a team. And that brings another learning, man. You've been on a journey of learning. So what is that like, hiring your first employee, doing employee interviews, doing recruiting? How's that process been for you?
I think it's awesome because just as a startup, being, in some cases underfunded, undersupported, just seeing the support of our generation, we're so used to being mislooked, not paid attention to that. Once we see ideas, once we see passion, once we see things, I have team members that are putting 100% effort, just as passionate about certain things as me. I can't release a picture anymore without, dude, you need to focus on our brand guidelines and, people that are passionate. And quite frankly, I can't pay them a ton of money, but they simply love what we're doing. They see this, they see what we're doing. And that is the beauty in our team. That's the beauty in what we're doing now. We just have people that, love what they're doing, and that's what's drawing me too. I get to work with individuals that can teach me things. This is a team effort. This is truly a team effort. And as you kind of see what's needed to scale, you need those that you can trust that are passionate in different things, checks and balances to kind of make, the best things come about. So I'm truly looking forward to engaging with just remarkable individuals in the area because there's a lot of them.
That's amazing, man. So, are you raising capital? How can the community support you?
So, I mean, we are raising capital, but outside of that, you know, through our purchasing, through supporting our website. So you can find us out at chvdjustin.com, chadjustin.com. That's chvdjustin.com. So V instead of an A in chadjustin.com. And we have a 15% off Go Bucks discount, in which you can, you know, purchase at a discounted rate. So all support matters, you know. The more we can increase online sales, the quicker we can, you know, create our own warehouse distribution center and be able to, you know, bring employees and have people packaging those things up, you know, the quicker we can kind of raise, we can start expanding our sales staff, you know, expanding our design creative staff and things of that nature, and invest better in the community. So with our social mission, a portion of every Wearpack sale is going to be given back towards student micro entrepreneurship funds and community engagements. So as we get supported, we get to, you know, invest back more into the community, you know, pave the way for the next generation of student entrepreneurs, maybe give them a $250 grant to go buy a sewing machine. You know, that helped me a lot. So, you know, I think that, you know, if we all just, you know, lift each other up little by little, we can, you know, get quite a ways.
All right, inspiring message, Chad. I'm inspired. I'm motivated. I'm ready to grind, man. I'm ready to go door to door, hand to hand combat on some sales right now. I appreciate you again. So thankful for you being so gracious and finally us getting together that
No,
time.
we needed this. This is awesome. This is great.
Yeah, that time in between has been well worth it. I'm so
Yes.
inspired, man. I was a, you know, a peripheral fan before. I'm a real fan now. I'm right behind you, man. I want to see you succeed,
Awesome.
and I'm going to
Awesome.
be here to support you. All right, 614 Startups Nation. That's another one, man. It's a wrap.
Another
All
one.
right,
That's a
an
wrap.
instant classic with my man Chad Porter of Chad Justin. Until next time, peace. That's a wrap, folks. You can find this and all our episodes on our website, 614startups.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and all your favorite podcasting platforms. Don't forget to subscribe and write a review. If you'd like updates sent directly to your inbox, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter on the website. To engage in the 614 Startups community, follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at 614 Startups on all platforms and join the conversation. For sponsorship opportunities and collaborations, email us at info@614startups.com.